So today is the last session, the last phone call in session 11. And then we're going to take a long break. And I have a tentative announcement. You know, we have one session left after this, session 12. And we're taking a break until after the retreat. And it is looking like, it's not 100% certain, but it's starting to get pretty definite that I'm actually going to have to make a trip out of the country at the beginning of August. So that would mean pushing back session 12 even more, which is unfortunate, but we have to think of it as a kind of, we can find a positive way to think about it. took me a while, but I found one, so that's an assignment for you. So what I'm thinking right now is that we will not actually start session 12 until August 23rd, which means, about 11 weeks in between. Now, for those of you who are on the retreat, that won't be too much of an issue. But for everybody else, it is an issue. What I was thinking as a way of trying to maintain a little bit more continuity between sessions 11 and 12 is that I would schedule a one-hour meeting on July 19th. And I have a different idea in mind for that meeting. What I'm going to ask everybody to do, as you all know, there's this new book that we published called Inside Knowledge. Published it a couple of months ago. I would like people to get hold of that book and read the introduction. I'll post more clearly which pages to read, and we should send out an email about that, Kathleen. But read the introduction, and then when we do when we have a meeting on July 19th, it's going to be an open discussion, and I'm just going to ask people to come with their own questions. And I may ask you to write something about it. I haven't decided yet. But in any event, I'm very interested in finding ways to use this book in presenting the vision, and this will be an opportunity to think about that, and it'll be an opportunity for you to think through the book, but also just think about the kinds of questions that come up as you work with TSK materials. So that's my announcement for today, and as I say, it might not happen, but it's looking pretty sure that it will. So the new schedule would be August 23rd through September 27th for that final session. Okay, so now we are ready to get started on this session, this class. The issue that's raised throughout this reading is really a fundamental issue, it seems to me. It gives some very valuable, the reading gives some very valuable guidance in how to activate the vision. But in particular, I think the really important element here is the question that's raised of how do you actually continue on with this inquiry? And the question is raised at several points in the reading. The concern, which is a very central concern, I think, in TSK, how do you keep all this from seeming abstract, and theoretical? The very first paragraph, Rinpoche raises that question. If we set out on this path of inquiry and analysis, he says it can be deeply inspiring, but the questions can start to seem abstract and speculative, or beyond our capacity to understand. And we've talked about this before, but those are exactly the kinds of comments that you hear people make when they are you know, when they say, no, I looked at TSK, but that's not for me, you know, and then they'll say things like that. They'll say, oh, it seems so abstract, or it seems too theoretical, or it doesn't seem to have any significance in my life, or I just don't understand that it's too hard, it's too difficult. So in raising those questions, I think these readings are performing a very important service, because we may feel that way ourselves, but other people, certainly, you know, in terms of making TSK more widely available, which is something that I think about a lot, these are the kinds of problems that come up. And in our own inquiry, even if we are quite confident based on our engagement with the vision, and everybody here has been engaging with the vision now for quite some time, and you all just about all started with some background, so you guys are you know, the experienced practitioners. But I think even, well, I'll just speak for myself, you know, I'm a pretty experienced practitioner in some sense, but I also have this issue where, I'm not practicing all the time. And one of the things you could say about the TSK vision is that there's really no reason why you shouldn't be practicing free and open inquiry in every moment. There's no added cost. You know, free and open inquiry is free in the other sense of the word. It may seem like it, but it doesn't really take extra energy. It doesn't really require you to do something that takes you away from what you're doing otherwise. The possibility for inquiry is always there. And yet, we don't use it. We just kind of slip into our regular habits, our regular patterns. We forget about questioning. And it would really be helpful to have a sense of what's going on there so that we could challenge it, you could say. But maybe the better way to talk about it is to say we could just do inquiry on the question of inquiry. You know, why aren't we doing inquiry? That's our question for inquiry. So there's a lot of useful guidance here, as I said. And that's what we want to look at. Fundamentally, that's what we want to be looking at. And kind of reading between the lines a little bit to figure out what's going on. So these first couple of paragraphs on page 279 give some of the answers, some of the ways people tend to look at this. Or if you just ask yourself, why am I not doing this kind of inquiry all the time? And of course, the point is not to feel guilty. The point is really to wonder. You know, what's especially if you have the sense that when this kind of inquiry is active, things do seem very fresh and alive and open, and new kinds of knowledge become available. So there's a real payoff. And then you say, so why is it I'm not doing it? What's going on there? So, maybe we say it seems kind of abstract. Maybe we say we don't know how to do it. And so we settle for an easy answer. And of course, you know, our habits are strong in a sense. There's great examples here. You know, we may stop with the first answer that comes to mind. And that's actually a kind of an issue. If people start to think that there's a TSK perspective, and then you say, well, I can answer everything and from that perspective, then, you know, the danger is real that you're going to look at everything. You're going to just accept the first answer. It may just be, you know, we kind of settle for saying, well, I don't know. You know, maybe somebody knows, but it's not me. Maybe it seems threatening, and we'll talk a little more about that in a moment. So John says, inquiry suggests constant action in a particular direction. But there is also the question of being the vision, resting in the depth of being and well-being of time and space. This is perhaps deeper than the inquiry aspect. Well, that's a very nice question. That's very worth asking. I suppose what I would say, and so now I have to be a little bit cautious because we've just been reminded that one of the ways in which we avoid inquiry is we just settle for the first answer that comes to mind. So I'm going to say something, but I wouldn't want to think for myself or for you that I'm settling for the first answer that comes to mind. So I think it's fair to say that inquiry is a means to activating the vision. Well, maybe I shouldn't say it that way. That inquiry, that the vision really has to do with putting time and space and knowledge at the center of TSK. And so you're right, it's more a question of being. And so inquiry, you could say, is a means to that end. On the other hand, when you are engaged in the being, in time and space and knowledge, then it seems as though the natural mode very much is one of inquiry, where you're always questioning what presents itself. And I think it's important to realize that at one point in these readings, Rinpoche says, the questioning doesn't have to take the form of asking a question and giving an answer. The questioning here is more a kind of an open, light acceptance of what appears. And what I mean by light acceptance is that it's always possible that it could appear differently. That's the kind of inquiry question. It's not accepting what's given. So light acceptance is, it's not such a good way of saying it, but it's meant to point in that direction. So there are a couple of other things. So this question has engaged some responses, which is good, and it should, because this is really right at the heart of what we're talking about, what we're aiming at in activating the vision. So Ken says, one need not insist on TSK to do TSK inquiry. Yes, absolutely. Suppose, I mean, you might say, and Rinpoche sometimes says things that kind of go in this direction, you might say, well, throughout history there have been people who have engaged in this kind of free and open inquiry without knowing anything about this particular presentation of the TSK vision. You don't need to insist on the vision. The point of this presentation, of the whole TSK vision, it seems to me, is to make available a form of inquiry that will lead toward an engagement with our own being, and to do so in a way that doesn't set limits. The thing about the TSK vision is that it's meant to be an ongoing unfolding that never takes a position, that never stops. And that's one of the really beautiful things about the TSK vision. So if you have, there can be other ways of having that kind of unending, in the sense of never stopping, never cutting off inquiry. There can be ways to do that, that don't, you don't have to talk in terms of time and space and knowledge. Might be some other way. So John comes back and says, inquiry can be an exploration of energy or fields as well, not dependent on mentation or questions. Yes, and I think I already mentioned that it doesn't have to be in the form of questions or answers. It may be, for instance, a lot of you are familiar with Kumye, but there could be other kinds of physical practices where the performing of a movement can be an inquiry into the nature of your own embodied being. And it doesn't have to depend on, as you say, John, mentation or questions. And then Ken raises the question, experience as metaphor? You may want to say a little bit more. I'm not sure I understand what you're saying. But I think the way I would read that or understand that is that whatever, let's say it this way, the word Okay, so Ken says experience is evocative, a metaphor in that sense. Yeah, I think that's fine. What I was going to say is the root meaning, the meaning of the Greek words from which metaphor is taken is to carry across, to go to another place. A metaphor is meant to take you somewhere else. And if you say your experience is a metaphor in that sense, that it's never just the final word about what's happening, it's always an invitation to move further. I think that's very close to what we're talking about. And Karen says, an ongoing wondering. I think these are all very fruitful ways of thinking. And again, the wondering doesn't have to be in terms of asking questions. That is, specifically naming what's going on. I wonder if that chair is real. That would be a kind of philosophical question. Well, it might lead to something. It might be a good way of starting questioning, but it doesn't have to come up in that form. It may just be that, let's say, when you sit down in the chair, it may be a kind of a wondrous thing, an occasion for wondering, that the chair can hold your weight. What does that mean? And that leads to questions, I suppose, about what it means to be weighty and what it means to support. So those are just some... The thing about TSK is everywhere you look, it's all questions. It's all open inquiry. Okay, well, that's very nice. I appreciate very much the comments that people have made, and it seems very appropriate, as I said, that we're asking these kinds of questions because, this raising these issues asks what is it that we're doing when we do TSK? And you all have a lot of experience to draw on in reflecting on that question. So Michael says, like a metaphor, so he's commenting on what Ken said, like a metaphor, experience can point to a more living, interconnected realm than our literal interpretations. Yeah, so the word literal is, as you know, I like to look at the precise meaning of the words, and the word literal has to do with words. We've talked a lot, of course, about identity and labels and words and language and how they really give us a particular version of reality. And TSK inquiry is meant to or operates in a way that opens that literal, limited understanding. And it opens it in the direction of a more living and interconnected realm. That's right. And so, the image of experience as a metaphor, and as you commented on it now, Michael, I think that makes really good sense. The thing is never just the thing. The experience is never just the experience. It's always kind of, you could say, pointing beyond itself. And that's what metaphors do. Okay, great. So we might want to look at that. I was going to go a little more into the different obstacles that Rinpoche describes here, but I think that it's very useful material, and this is in the first couple of pages, but it's easy enough to work that through for yourself and think it through for yourself. So let's just practice for a few minutes now. Maybe we'll do it for 3 or 4 minutes. And just ask, how can we go about doing inquiry? Rinpoche says right at the beginning of the chapter, inquiry and analysis. So analysis seems to suggest the kind of, mentation, as John said. But inquiry can be much broader than that. So if you just settle back into your experience, settle back into your environment, settle back into your embodiment, and engage in this kind of wonder, this kind of inquiry, what happens? And if you find there are obstacles, if you find that you don't know what to do or it doesn't seem like it's going to be fruitful, that's just another occasion for going on with the inquiry. That's always the point that that Rinpoche is, that TSK makes. There are no stopping points. Any objection, any limit that you set is another occasion for inquiry or wonder, or you could say perhaps metaphor. So let's try that for 3 or 4 minutes. Let's see where that takes us, okay? Okay, so let's come back together. And see where that leads us. As always, we do these very short exercises. And one of the reasons we do that, you know, apart from the practical matter that it's in the middle of a phone call, but one of the reasons is because you don't have to go anywhere else. It's not like you really have to kind of go through this process of warming up like you're going to go and do a run, you know, and so first you limber up and so on. No, you can do it just right away. It's just right there. We're not going anywhere else. So here are a couple of comments. Hayward says, I can attune to the presence of space in experience. Yeah, so I think that's right that you know, you could approach this in terms of space or time or knowledge. We're really right now looking more in the knowledge dimension, but certainly space openness, you know, the spaciousness of space is also a way of engaging or questioning, because whatever appears remains spacious, remains open. And so in experience, that dimension of space openness, of allowing and accommodation, that's there. Michael says, I wonder if enjoyment is still the best guide of what is worthwhile embracing and including in our lives. Not to pursue pleasure for its own sake, but if a sense of fulfillment doesn't reward our interests and intentions, perhaps we have reason to reevaluate what we are doing and emphasizing. Well, that's a great question to explore. I was struck a few minutes ago when somebody asked me a question, and then I felt a little hesitant to answer because of the reminder in the text that says, you know, so often we just settle for our first answer. And I don't want to be the one who's giving first answers that we then settle for, you know, and say, oh, that was, now I get it, you know. it must be what Jack said. You know? I want to make sure that we stay open to our experience. So in this particular, in your particular comment, Michael, I think that's a great thing to look at. Is enjoyment, when is enjoyment the right guide? And are there times, if we aren't enjoying ourselves, does that mean we've taken a wrong turn and should kind of recalibrate or rethink what we're doing? Well, the way to look at that would be to look at what's happening if we're not enjoying our experience. You know, what is it in our experience that is not joyful, let's say? So I think you could go in both directions. David says, I relax and look at my thinking. I see levels happening, surface stories, their circular nature, putting me at the center in time. I see usually unnoticed value system operating below them, what's felt to be good or bad for me at the time. I see how I filter current experience through past stories. There are deeper levels available. Now, there's always deeper levels available. You give great examples of the kinds of things that may come up when we let ourselves wonder, when we let ourselves question, when we let the inquiry be free and open. And there's so many other levels, so many others. Eliana says, for me, the inquiry is really activated when I'm open and aware. That's kind of going in the space direction again. It seems that in this way, knowledge makes itself available. I have to be very gentle. If any kind of effort is present, all that I can get is the same old stuff. So I think that makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, if it seems that we're just stuck, if you have a feeling of being stuck in the same old stuff, there's still a way to question that, right? There's still the possibility of asking what's going on in that sense of stuckness or same old stuffness. But the feeling of being gentle, that may be a very good guide. And you know, I think I'll there's still more things that people have been saying more, but I want to make a comment here. It seems like there's a couple of different ways of proceeding. Of course, there's many. But one of the things we very seldom talk about in our phone calls is the specific exercises. But they're very much a part, of course, of the TSK inquiry. And the thing about doing an exercise is that it helps focus our inquiry. And in a sense, it makes things easier. It gives us a structure, even if that structure is not meant to exclude anything. But it still gives us a structure. And that's one way of doing inquiry. And in somewhat similar way, what Eliana says, you know, you can say, well, the way that I want to do inquiry is a kind of very gentle, accepting, open, and aware way. And that gives us a kind of structure, maybe very helpful. The other way of doing it is just to try to stay exactly, or, you know, maybe I shouldn't say try, because, as Eliana says, effort can be a problem, can be, on one level, can be a problem. But another way to do it is, you know, it's not like you say, well, now I'm going to stop what I'm doing and start doing a TSK inquiry. The inquiry happens within what we're doing. So those are two different approaches, and they're both, you know, they both have value, and it seems like they both can lead somewhere. Okay, John comments on Michael's comment. He says, I like what Michael is saying. This is about joy and enjoyment as a kind of a gateway. So it's interesting, we have several gateways that have been presented, or at least a couple here. Eliana says a kind of gentleness and openness and awareness. Hayward says something similar about space, about the openness of space as a kind of gateway. And Michael says enjoyment as a gateway. And he makes very clear, not enjoyment, not pleasure. Okay. So John says, I like what Michael is saying. Perhaps joy is the essence of inquiry. The inquiry of knowledge into time and space. Yeah. Or you could say it the other way around, right? You could say the joy of engaging the dynamic of space, or time rather, and the openness of space as the essence of inquiry. Maybe that doesn't quite work, but I think it's about right. Okay. Actually, I see, John, I spoke too soon. You say something similar. You say, that is resting in the well-being of time and space while we are active, being in the joy of time and space living us. So that's very nicely put, and I will leave it alone. Ken says, this sounds a little bit like some kind of a something that's said in the Zen tradition, but I'm not sure if that's what you had in mind, Ken. He says, the thing is dull. The thing is dull. The mirror is bright. And where else does the thing appear? The mirror, bright and open, even dullness. Mm-hmm. So there is an exercise in the TSK book that we've done. It's at least once or twice during this course called Awareness as a Reflective Surface. Right? And so there's the brightness of knowing, which is a mirror-like brightness. And that's one of the images that's used for awareness in the Buddhist tradition. There's different kinds of awareness there. But I think mirror-like awareness, yeah. So if we engage that brightness, then whatever shows up, you could say, participates in the brightness. The mirror brightened open, even in dullness, I think, even in dullness. The Zen saying is I don't remember it word for word, but maybe it's take too long to go into it. It's not a class in Zen Buddhism, so let's skip it. But it seems there's a very famous, I think it's in the Platform Sutra of the Sixth Patriarch. There's a whole exchange about the nature of the mirror and what shows up in the mirror, and do you need to polish the mirror, and so on. You can go and look at that if you like. Karen writes, noticing the gravity of thoughts, wondering how they come along, noticing my comments, decisions, I am in contact, being alive. So that's very nice. That's going back to your sense of wonder as the kind of trigger point, which is another way, the point that activates TSK inquiry and puts us in touch with our own being, being alive, as you say, being in touch with time and space. And I was actually going to call attention to the exercise for this week, which was two parts of exercise 4 in DTS. It's very similar to the questions you're asking here. 4B, how does thought arise as thought? How is there transition from one thought to the next? Why is there a sequence of thinking? How does one sequence come to an end and another begin? And there's more. There are many more questions. Those are all questions for wonder. And the word wonder in English, I'm not sure it works this way in every language, is a very nice word because on the one hand, it suggests an inquiry. I wonder how that works, we say. I don't think you say that in German. But anyway, in English you do. It can be a kind of an invitation to questioning. But it also has this other sense of just opening and marveling, being amazed at the wonder. So when I see that Michael writes to a little bit further down, it just caught my eye. He says, I wonder what the mirror is. So that's a question. But it's also at the same time, that's why the word seems to hold this really nice depth. It's a wondering that opens us in wonder to what appears. So the question is a way of opening to wonder. And the other side of it is just as true. So Karen started by saying she starts with the gravity of thoughts. And we've talked many times about the gravity of thoughts and how it kind of holds us down. One of the ideas, the image of gravity, is that we're being pushed down by a weight that keeps us from flying free, you might say. But noticing it and wondering about it, that frees us. And Klaus says, continuing with what Michael has said and John, to become joyful might be the best way that people become interested in TSK. That's as a practical matter, I'm not sure how that works exactly, because if you say, well, if you want to understand TSK, just practice being joyful, and people say, well, sure, I'd like to do that. But how do I do it? How can I be joyful all the time? But we have to. I think it's important to be able to show people, or in a way, to show it in our own experience, but also to have them open to the possibility that the inquiry itself is a gateway to joy, or the wonder is a gateway to joy, or to go. We've gone through a number of different possibilities here. But yes, a couple of you have now said, well, if there's no joy in it, something is incomplete, let's say, in terms of activating the vision. That seems very true. And yet, the lack of joy, or the heaviness, or the dullness, or the fear, or whatever it is that comes up, is it also not an absolute limit? It's not, if you imagine that you're trying to find your way in an unfamiliar territory, and there are these various paths, and you go down one path, and then you come to a barrier, and that barrier is unhappiness or stuckness or heaviness or gravity. I think in TSK you wouldn't say, oh, now that shows that I'm on the wrong path. I have to go back where I came from and try to find a different path. You could say, within that stuckness, can I find the joy? And if the wonder and the questioning open up the sense of limits, or open up the emotional reaction, some of the examples in the reading are boredom and fear, or a kind of laziness, or a sense that it takes too much energy, if we can open all of those up, wouldn't that be the way to proceed? So Michael says, I wonder, let me go back and ask, because Klaus added something. He said, joy isn't abstract. And yes, I mean, I think I see where what you're saying, Klaus. You're saying, you know, the concern that we started with is sometimes doing the TSK inquiry feels abstract. It seems like we're asking these questions, you know, where do thoughts come from? Sounds very abstract. Why should I care? So if we can contact the joy, and again, I suppose there are two ways, you know, there's the joy of inquiry, and that's what I've really been emphasizing, because I think, after all, this first chapter, we're not going to get beyond it. We're hardly even going to get into it, I can see, but that's fine. This chapter is called Reign of Questions. So inquiry is at the heart of the reading that we did for this week. But it could also be that there are other ways of contacting joy. You know, there's this lovely book that Rinpoche has written called Joy of Being. If we discover the joy within our own being, doesn't that lead automatically, you know, or spontaneously is a better word, doesn't that lead spontaneously to a questioning or a wonder? Or isn't it, you know, maybe you could say there's very little separation between joy and knowledge, or joy and wonder. Okay, so Michael writes, I wonder what the mirror is that it can reflect more than it is receiving. Right. Is that image, can a greater knowledge reflecting our limited images of a source of knowing, which is also able to reflect? And Ken answers, yes. That's good, because I don't quite understand what your question was saying, Michael, but Ken understood and accepted it, and that seems fine. So I won't say any more about it. Ileana says something similar, I think, to what I was trying to say, which is I see that for me, joy comes when knowledge becomes itself available, not before. So if that's true, and that, you know, that makes sense to me, but if that's true, then what it suggests is that that knowledge doesn't have to arise, and I'm coming back to a theme from before, it doesn't have to arise as the answer to a question. Mm-hmm. So again, let's say you do a movement or a dance, let's say, and in that dance there's great joy. In that joy, there's also a knowing. Now, I don't think that means that whenever you do dance or whenever you play music and there's a joyful quality to it, that knowledge, you could say knowledge is potentially available there. But if we refer it back to a kind of limited understanding, which we typically do, I think we shut it down prematurely. So, you know, I don't think you can, and I don't think anybody's saying this, but I don't think you can equate joy and knowledge, just kind of say, okay, whenever we're joyful, that's all the knowledge we need. I don't think so. So Ken has another question here, he says, or another comment. He's answering a question, but I'm not quite sure what question he's answering. You can't, he says. You want to tell us, Ken? He says, you can't what? You can't know something, I would guess. And then he says, the response is great laughter. Okay, Ken says, being always joy. Okay, can you be always joy? No, you can't. And the response to that is great laughter, which, again, takes us right back into joy. So, yes, you know, the gravity of thinking, the gravity of being, the gravity of our limitations doesn't have to cut us off from the joy of knowledge, the joy of being space and time. Okay, you know, I think I'm going to stop there. We're really just about out of time, and I do need to stop right on time today. So we did not get very far into the reading, so maybe I'll write a little bit more in the next week about the reading, but I think the reading is very clear, and I'm sure you can work with it on your own. But we are going to take a long break now. So remember, my plan is that on July 19th we'll have this one-hour meeting based on the introductory material in Inside Knowledge. So that still is more than a month away, but it'll be an opportunity. And then some of you I'll be seeing on the retreat on July 26th, so that'll be a great occasion. And then we'll start up again, and I'll make it clear exactly what the dates are for starting up. Okay, thank you. I really appreciate people's comments, and I feel that what people were talking about today is very much a reflection of where we've come in this course, and where you are in your practice, and it's very encouraging. So, thank you, and we will talk in a while.